हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Tetra Sutra, Adhyaya 3, Adhikarna 2, Understanding the Jiva and the Supreme Brahman, page 61. Ramanuja holds that it is incorrect to speak of the soul being the witness to anything in the Sushupti state. There is literally nothing, no thing, to be seen in Sushupti. Ramanuja acknowledges the presence of the subject, the Jivatma, in Sushupti, but he does not acknowledge the attribute of the subject. Consciousness is inactive in this time. We ought not to say, in Sushupti, consciousness is pure, like Shankaracharya says. After all, when we come out of deep sleep, we return to the wakeful engagements of trying to satisfy our material desires. Rather, we may say, consciousness is disengaged while in Sushupti. It does not operate between subject and object and the relation of subject and object, which are the three bases of cognition. Consciousness may be disengaged during Sushupti, yet consciousness is never separate from the subject. In this way, the subject and its consciousness are non-dual, Advaita. Vedanta Psychology 100. So, Ramanujacharya is trying to point out is that, because remember we're saying that they're giving the aspect of the wakefulness and dreaming, they're giving that as the Buddhists and the impersonalists are giving that as these are the states of, you know, material consciousness, material contamination. And then when you go into deep sleep, then they're saying one is saying, then you're coming to that state of nothingness for the Buddhists, you know, and the Shankarites will say pure consciousness. You know, you're getting to the point where now you're like Brahman. So they're trying to attribute that the deep sleep, that's the, like a spiritual state. You know, the soul doesn't exist, that individuality doesn't exist, all that is there, and so, you understand? We're dealing with a lot of ignorance here. Right?
Sorry? Nice philosophy for those who are tired.
Yes, the philosophy for those who are tired. Are you tired? Yeah, so. So Ramanuja's pointing out, no, you can't use that as a position, is that the concept means the soul is unaware because there's nothing to be aware of. Like I said before, you can be aware that you were unaware. Right? You know, I slept well, I didn't think of anything. Right? You can be aware of that, but you're not aware of anything. So this thing of that, now at this point, now you're seeing the transcendental position. Okay. About, this is Shankara. Shankara argues that the self becomes the witness of primeval avidya, right? That avidya before the tamasa, taijasa, and vaikarika. By this act of witnessing avidya, the ahankara dissolved, right? You just see it just somehow or another goes away, right? You know, just like when you see that, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I was a little greedy here. Just all your greed is gone, right? And you never are greedy ever again, right? Isn't that how it works? Yeah, exactly, right? So that's it. And that's your conscious. Here you're unconscious, right? But somehow or another you're able to see this. For Shankara, Sushupti is the threshold of pure consciousness. In that, the self is free from material perceptions and conceptions. So you can see is they don't actually have a real understanding of spiritual. Their idea is spiritual is not material. So when you're not functioning in the material platform, means that in activities, karma and that, then they take it, that's spiritual. Right? So that's the difficulty. So Ramanuja Acharya is addressing that. that no, the consciousness and the living entity, they're non-dual. Not that, oh, he's seeing, in this state he sees the avidya, and then he gives up this ahankara that, you know, I am a separate entity, so he doesn't have the individual consciousness. This kind of thing, Ramanujacharya is saying no. Yes?
So their whole theory basically is about negating the matter, but it's not about what's above matter, because they don't know that.
They don't know, and they don't. There's nothing to do. The Buddhists just extinguish existence, and so somehow or another, that's going to be great. Because now I say, oh, if it was just, you know, just like, let's say there's so much to do. Oh, if there was nothing to do, I had absolutely, that would be fabulous. But you know, anytime you have nothing to do, you get bored. Mm-hmm. But so, the thing is they're basing their endeavor on that they are an individual and how as an individual they'll be happy, but the end result is they're not an individual, and somehow or another they're not piecing it all together very well. You know, it means that's probably says spiritual suicide. Like someone who commits suicide, in their mind it sounds like it'll be a great idea. But the point is they don't actually understand what's beyond what they're dealing with. You know? So it's the same thing. Same kind of thing, is that they don't have any idea of spiritual because they're trying to get beyond the world. You know, in that way, they're called transcendentalists, but they're not actually transcendentalists because they can't function in the transcendental realm. They can only get out of here. Does that make sense? You know, it's like leaving the house and standing on the front porch, but you can't go out and interact with the world. And it's just that they don't know. They have no idea. There's nothing there. So that's why you see in these three states of consciousness, then they're putting the third one, the Sushupti, is actually spiritual because it's beyond the activities of the material, gross and subtle. So they're taking that. So you can see that they're dealing in ignorance when, you know, deep sleep is considered perfection. You know.
Like and we all know ignorance is bliss.
Yes, 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 that's it. So, how you say? Tamas Ananda. Right? Yeah.
Somebody asked, when the soul, not the soul, when the consciousness, you know, this out of the body experience?
One of these.
Yes.
Okay. This is from?
The Lord Gauranga. From his lotus feet and from his garment.
Okay, thank you.
So, technically, the soul stays in the body, just the consciousness that
you... The subtle body may float around, but, you know, it's just, you know, why is the soul... Because if the soul leaves, then the body won't function. The subtle body goes out. The thing is these things are in that state where you're not really in control in this and that. So just because it's different or it's a little bit above, then people become so enamored. But so what? You go flying around. So what? Big deal. Can you do anything with it? No. You know, Shankaracharya could leave his body, go and enter another body and then perform activities as the king. You know, that's useful. You know, but this, it's just something to keep people distracted. You know, it's like all the mystical kind of things, the New Agey kind of things. It's just something you don't know. So that little bit of ignorance is actually the taste. You don't know. You don't really want to know. Does that make sense? You know, it's just, it's there, and it's, you don't know why it's working. It's mystical. It's something beyond. It's something. But the point is that beyond what? And how far does it get? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not so important. You know what I'm saying? Is that, you know, people make it into something as if it's important. But how does it improve your devotional service or anything? Not at all. So, you know, anyway, that's what's going on when you're dreaming. You know? So if you're a little bit more aware, then, you know, yeah, that means it's even... See, if you're dreaming, it's not good sleep. So if you're astral traveling, it's even worse sleep. So how is it an advantage? You know, does that make sense? It's just, oh no, but, you know, so yeah, you want some ignorance. It's like it's just the unknown, there's fear. So it cultivates fear because you don't know. They'll say they want to know, but they don't really want to know, because then when they actually know, then it's just not, it's not that important. So,
yes. Prabhupada commented on that aspect, saying that the prana still stays in the body, the subtle body may go out.
Yes.
That's how it's different.
How it works. Okay, that's why you stay alive. Okay, does that make sense? The prana stays there, but then the mind, you know, intelligence, ego, that can go flying around in life. You know, just like, you know, whoopee. Okay. So then, top the page. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. You need an A after the D in Prabhupada.
Okay.
I mean, unless we're going Hindi here, you know. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this in his Bhagavad Gita lecture in London, August 1973. Quote, "That which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul." Bhagavad Gita 2:17. The nature of the soul is very clearly described here. Any sensible man can understand it from this verse that within the body there is an eternal soul. Lord Krishna says, "Avinashi tu tad vidhi yena sarvam idam tatam." That thing which is spread all over the body is imperishable. What is spread all over the body? Consciousness. Everyone can understand this. If I pinch any part of your body, you feel pain. Why? Because consciousness is there. Pains and pleasures are felt so long as there is consciousness in the body. Sometimes we are made unconscious by drugs or by chloroform or some other anesthetic. And then we cannot feel anything, right? Because the consciousness is not there. There are three stages of consciousness: Jagrati, Swapna, and Sushupti. The first stage is wakefulness. The second is sleep. And the third is deep sleep, unconsciousness. When you are awake, your consciousness is very acute, very strong. In the sleeping state, there is consciousness, but it is not so active. In the state of deep sleep, the consciousness is subdued. It is not working. Death means that one is unconscious for a long period, because the soul is eternal, as Krishna explains here. There is no birth and death for the soul. When the body is annihilated, the soul remains unconscious for some times, six and a half months for a human being. In other words, the soul remains unconscious for 6.5 months within the womb of the mother, and then consciousness revives. Some of you have the experience of becoming unconscious under anesthesia. The surgical operation takes place, but you do not perceive any pain because you remain unconscious for several hours. Then gradually you begin dreaming. From the unconscious state you come to the dreaming state, and after dreaming you awaken. Just as you go down from the awakened state to the dreaming, and from the dreaming state to unconsciousness. So you come up from unconsciousness to the dreaming state, and from the dreaming state to awakened full consciousness. So, here Krishna clearly says that consciousness, the symptom of the soul, is avinashi, imperishable. Previously he said to Arjuna, quote, "You and I and all these others existed in the past. We exist now and we shall continue to exist in the future." That means we are all eternally individuals. It's just interesting that Prabhupada's translation of that, you know, "You, I, and all these others existed in the past, we exist now, and we shall continue to exist in the future." Right? And so, when Jayadaita Dwaita Maharaj went back to the original tapes on Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada spoke, then, you know, the original transcripts and that, then he saw that this was more what Prabhupada had said. Because before it used to say, "Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor the people." It was just made more poetic.
Yeah, that's what it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still like that?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they changed that. Right?
No.
Okay. That means we are all eternally individuals. In the past, we were individuals. At the present, we are individuals. And we shall continue to be individuals in the future. There is no truth to the rascal Mayavadi philosopher's idea that after liberation we all intermingle and become a homogeneous lump. Makes it less attractive, right? Even after we attain liberation, we remain individual particles of consciousness. As Krishna explains here in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces. This means we are all individual spirit souls, eternally. It is not that we were lumped together at one time, that we have been cut into pieces, and that we are therefore now individuals. This Mayavadi philosophy is false. We are individuals eternally. Krishna will later explain that in the Bhagavad Gita 15.7, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The living entities in this material world are my eternal fragmental parts. This is confirmed in the Upanishads, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. Of all the eternal conscious living beings, there is one who is supreme. Because otherwise, if it's part of that, it's cut into pieces, then the problem comes up is that we don't exist. You know, in their philosophy, it's an illusion that we exist because we're just a piece of Brahman. You know, and it's an illusion that we are a piece, but we're not actually a piece. But if we're not, we're just Brahman, then why do we have separate consciousness? And why are we as a separate individual endeavoring to become back to Brahman? Right? Because the point is if we're already Brahman, then what's the problem? Right? Does that make sense? Means if being an individual is an illusion, then the individual making an effort is also an illusion. Right? So it means by their philosophy, it's Brahman that's caught up. So Brahman should be making the endeavor to pick everything up together. Like if you're walking along and, you know, you drop something, you pick it up. It's not like you're walking along and you drop your bag. It's not the bag's business now to, you know, get it back together and by self-realize and get back to your hand. You know what I'm saying? So that it's not the hand's business. It's Brahman's business. So you see is that whatever they do, they always make it backwards. You know, when you're the least conscious, that's when they're saying that now you're really conscious. So that's the ignorance. That's how the modes work. Everyone is under the grip of material nature, so how can any of us be the highest authority? But the rascals imagine, yes, I am the highest authority. I am moving the sun and the planets. Right, because if they're God, they think they're doing all that, though they're not. It's just a feeling, right? Simply rascaldom. This is their meditation, to falsely think, quote, I am the supreme, I am controlling everything. The sun is moving under my direction. The seas are under my direction, end quote. This is the impersonalist meditation. Right, because they try to meditate this, and that way they'll become the supreme. Yeah. Just try to understand how foolish they are. Will any sane man say, I am moving the sun, I am moving the moon, I am moving the seas? Will any sane man say that? No. Will anyone here say that you are moving the sun and moon? Anyone? Who can say? Nobody can say this. And still these rascals are claiming, I have become God. We are all God. This rascal atheistic philosophy has killed the whole world. So many quote-unquote incarnations, so many quote-unquote gods are preaching false theories only. So many gurus, all rascals. Take my word for it. Anyone who is speaking against the principles of the Bhagavad Gita is rascal number one. That's all. Don't give him any credit. Ask him to his face, do you accept Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He says no, tell him, then you are a rascal. That's all. There's no exception. You don't have to worry about it. Right, because the absolute truth is straightforward in that. People, by their speculation, try to throw in the thing, don't know, but maybe. You know, that's where it's from. But they're not real. You know, it's like Syadvad. The Jains, but it could be that or it could not be that. It may be this, maybe not. You know, it's just all way different ways to create speculation. Purva Paksha. Quote, if ahankar is dissolved, only void remains, end quote. This means, quote, there can be no perception of Atma because the sense of I is absence, ahankar being destroyed. Right, because ahankar is the void. When ahankar is dissolved, when you get rid of the ahankara, then there's nothing remains. Right. So since there's no perception of the atma, right? Therefore, there's no ahankara. Therefore, you've come to this transcendental platform, right? So that instead of walking around thinking I'm controlling the sun and moon, they should be spending their time asleep, you know, endeavoring for deep sleep, deep sleep meditation, DSM. Vritti. From the Buddhist comes another objection to the existence of the soul in deep sleep. When there is no experience of the senses or the mind, why not assume that only the void remains during sleep? In effect, they say there is death every time one enters deep sleep. Yeah. So you're going to go spend some quality dead time, right? Uttara. The Atma is described as indivisible, akanda, because being very small, it cannot be divided. Purvapaksha. Because the combination with the hankar, which appears when rising from sleep, one thinks I slept happily in the waking state. The Atma is merely consciousness during deep sleep. Uttara. The person does not remember because he does not have the experience of objects. Memory and experience are equated. Therefore, the Atma experiences this, right? Because they're saying is merely consciousness. He doesn't exist. You're trying to point out, no, he exists. That's why he's able to perceive this. Purvapaksha. Atma is awareness only. How can you say that Atma is aware of something? He's only the awareness, so how can he be aware? Right? You understand what the trick they're using? Means we're saying the soul is consciousness, but he is conscious. They're just saying he's consciousness, so he doesn't actually exist. So consciousness can't be conscious of themselves. Right? Because you're conscious of something else, so there's two. They're trying to make it one here. So where we make it one, they make it two, or we make it two, they make it one. You'll just see it's always like that, whatever it is. Right? Uttara, the awareness takes shelter of the Atma, right? So the awareness is there, otherwise how is it that he is being able, how is there a connection between the soul and when one wakes up, that awareness? Because it takes shelter of the soul. Purvapaksha, the Upanishad says, the Atma does not see. Remember that previous verse, the Chandogya. Uttara, in deep sleep it does not see, because of absence of objects to be seen, and not because it is not a seer. The rest is clear, right? It means if there's nothing to see, you can't see something. That doesn't mean you don't exist and there's nothing. It's just that when you're in deep sleep, there is no objects to see. So therefore, there's nothing seen. But you're aware of nothing to be seen. Anucheta 55. There are four inferences in terms of positive and negative conclusions. Atma is Purushartha. Body is not Purushartha. The first inference for Atma is by seeing the difference between the temporary and the permanent. The second inference is through the difference between the seer and the seen. The third inference is through the difference between the witness and the witnessed. The fourth inference, which gives awareness of happiness, is through the difference between the suffering jiva and the jiva is the shelter of prema. Pipalayana speaks to Nimi. Oh, this is from Pipalayana. Anucheta Prakashika. In explaining the two Bhagavatam verses, 11.3.38-39, four inferences were made to establish the nature of the jiva as distinct from the body and material world. Jiva Goswami repeats them here for the easy comprehension of the reader. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. In explaining the two Bhagavatam verses, four inferences are made. These are summarized in six lines. Tarka refers to Anuman, which is an Anga of Tarka. Because the body comes and goes, because the body is seen, because the body is witnessed, because the body is the seat of suffering, it can be concluded that the Atma is separate from the body. Right? Does that make sense? The body is temporary, you get different bodies, it comes and goes, it changes, so therefore the soul doesn't. Because the body is seen, we're able to see the body, that means we're separate from the body to see, because if you're the same thing, how do you see? Right? Because the body is witnessed, because we can experience, we can all these things, and because the body is the seat of suffering. the sufferings in the body, and the soul identifying there, that's where the problem comes. So when the soul stops to identify, then that problem goes away. But it doesn't mean that the Atma doesn't remain. Because the Atma remains, because it sees, because it is the witness, because it is the abode of prema, step by step it may be inferred that the Atma exists. This can be expressed negatively as Vyatireka as well. Footnote 24. Because the body changes and the Atma does not change. The body cannot be Purusharta. Another Vyatireka, if Atma did not exist, there would be no witness or seer to the body. Right, so you're using it for the positive, you're using it for the negative. Riti. In conclusion, this Adhikarana analyzed the characteristics of the Jiva in order to give knowledge about the Supersoul and Brahman. This was all based on analysis of the individual's experience. Now Srila Jiva Goswami embarks on a new analysis based on the purpose of the universe. Okay. So now, Adhyayana 3. Adhikarana 3? No. Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 3. Understanding the Absolute Truth by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics. Anuchedas 56 through 63. Adhikarana Prakashita. Until now, the analysis has been from the Vyasti perspective, or from the individual's point of view. Now Srila Jiva Goswami begins explaining Brahman from the aggregate, or the Samasti point of view. In terms of the 10 topics dealt with in the Mahapuranas. So you have Vyasti and Samasti. Vyasti means you see the difference. Samasti means you see the how everything's together. So this is just how things are functioning. So you see the Achinta Beta Beta Tattva means both of these can go on simultaneously. Otherwise, other philosophies using one or the other. And whichever works for them, they'll use. So there won't be a consistency. But for Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, they can both function at once. Well, in other philosophy, it has to be one or the other. First, he analyzes the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, citing Sukadeva Goswami's list in the second canto, and then Sukadeva Goswami's list in the second canto, and then Sutta Goswami's list in the 12th canto. Jiva Goswami establishes that the purpose of describing the first 9 topics is to support and glorify the 10th topic, Ashraya, which is the shelter of all others. So, Srila Jiva Goswami shows that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Ashraya Tattva, or supporting element, from the aggregate point of view. And also, he supports each individual, even in his day-to-day sensory experiences. The whole Bhagavatam is centered around the 10th item, Ashraya, the shelter of all, Lord Krishna. Hence, to categorize the Bhagavatam canto sequentially based on 10 topics from canto 3 to 12 is considered as incorrect by Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Baladeva. Right? You don't take it that the cantos are describing like that. It's that these are the topics. Some canto may have more prominence of one topic or another, but it's not that it's by cantos of the topics. Thus, from various angles, Jiva Goswami establishes that Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate scriptural authority and that it teaches the following. Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service is the process for attaining the supreme goal of life, and that supreme goal is pure, unalloyed love of Godhead. So, we see, as remember we were discussing before, is that these 3 points, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, back in, you know, early in the 60s and like this, everybody knew this. And then they knew, I am the soul, I'm servant of Krishna, therefore by following the process of chanting, which is that devotional service, then I will attain to that supreme goal of pure love of God. So this essential points of the philosophy, that's the essence of the Bhagavatam's teachings. Everybody knew, these were the new bhaktas. They would talk this stuff. Right? Yeah. So it's just, that's the whole point, is you start from here, then expand out. Someone say, oh no, that's too elevated. That's only from the ascending school. Yes, that would be the conclusion. But in the descending school, this is the simplest point. And then from there, you can expand it according to your ability. Anucheta 56. The nature of this jiva is pure consciousness. Chin matram. That tattva, which is non-different from the Lord, because of being a similar conscious knower, and because of being the Lord's amsha, is described here. That is described in terms of the individual conditions, individual jiva's condition, the asti. What is defined as the shelter, ashraya, is described through the 10 characteristics of a Mahapurana, indicating the complete conscious being, samasti, in two verses. Atra sargo visargas cha stanam poshanam utaya manvantare svanu kata nirodha mukti ashraya. In this Purana, there are 10 topics. Creation, secondary creation, protection, mercy of the Lord, material activities, the conduct of the Manus, stories of the Lord, destruction of the universe, liberation, and the ultimate shelter. Dasamasya vishudhyartam navanam ihalakshanam varnayanti mahatmana shutenartena chandasa. The great devotees such as Vidura and Maitreya described properly the 9 topics in order to impart the highest knowledge of the 10th topic, through the words of the scripture and stories to illustrate their meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10, 1-2. Yes.
So Jiva Goswami says it's improper to take, you know, from 3rd to 12th canto.
Yes.
And some devotees make from 1 till 10th, and 10th then will be the ashraya. Is that correct?
No, the point is it's not by canto. Because you see, is Krishna not being an ashraya for Kardama Muni in the 3rd canto? Yeah, so the point is this element of ashraya, the element of, what was it? Means the primary creation, the secondary creation, that's described 3 times in the first 6 cantos.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not by canto there. Then protection, we see basically after the formal opening, we start with that, with when you start the Mahabharata section, you know, with Uttara, you're starting right there, right? Mercy of the Lord, you see that all throughout the whole Bhagavatam. Material activities, how it's working, that's always being described in context of what's the spiritual. The conduct of the Manus, then it will come up, and it goes throughout so many cantos. Like that, I think it's finished by 9th at least, but, you know, you don't have it, right? Stories of the Lord, that's all the way through. Right? So, first canto, it's all stories about the Lord.
Yeah.
Like that. Destruction of the universe, then that will be described in its various places, but, you know, I think 5th canto deals with that, but it'll be, you know, like that. Liberation, that's dealt here and there. And then the ultimate shelter, then Krishna, then he being the ashraya for all that, that also is being brought up basically in all the prayers and everywhere. So you may have an area where, let's say the stories of the Lord, then the 10th canto, so it will be specifically about that. You know, it'll be, but at the same time, as you see, is there's just so many prayers and everything in there also. So it's only with the understanding of the other 9 cantos can you understand the 10th, appreciate it. But the point is that stories of the Lord, then how he's the ashraya, then that's another aspect, because you're looking at it from that universal point of view. You can see how he's dealing with the individual. That's a story that he's showing mercy, he's protecting, he's being the shelter. Does that make sense? So all these can be happening in one pastime. So it doesn't need to be broken up, and this is here, this is here. It means you can show this is an example of this, but we don't have to take a section of the Bhagavatam and say this is where all this is happening, and it's not happening elsewhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we see as the 10th canto is because it's about Krishna's pastimes. So the idea is to surrender. You need the first 9 cantos to actually give up, you know, that material consciousness. Then we see coming to that platform, then we are very, stories go very nicely. There's a deeper understanding of the stories. Manvantara and Ikshanu Kata are 2 separate items. 10 elements, starting with Sarga, primary creation, are described. In that list, in order to attain knowledge of tattva, dashamasya vishuddhyartham. The great devotees describe the sarupas, lakshanam, of the other nine, navanam. But that tenth topic is not perceived here, someone may say. The devotees describe the nine to indicate the supreme tattva directly, anjasa, by various verses of praise, shrutena, and by purports of various stories, artena. So the nine are described so you actually appreciate the Lord, how the Lord is, as he says, in everything. He's the value of everything and makes everything work. And at the same, oh, that's what that is. Sounds like you hear these kind of like somebody's beating a little wooden things. That's the bells are on the elephant's neck.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, what is that? Maybe that's some kind of thing. And then I tell the elephants go by.
Sounds like music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have, instead of having like the metal ones, they have wooden kind of bells. Yeah, so through the nine topics, you indicate the tenth. Because otherwise, someone may not be able to understand. So it's through the nine, then you bring out the tenth. Because even if you have the pastime of the Lord, it doesn't mean people know it's the Lord. Right? Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. In order to explain knowledge of the Lord, knowledge of the sarup of jiva has been explained. Similarly, one can use similar inferences to determine the sarupa of the Lord. It was previously concluded that the sarupa of the jiva is consciousness and having awareness of other objects. The jiva is considered non-different by being of the same type, a conscious knower, taya akritya, and by being an amsha, jivamsha, rather than swamsha. Right? Swamsa means it's his incarnations, Vishnu Tattva. But jivamsa then will be the jiva. Akritis tu sriyam rupe samanyam vapusor api. Akriti means women, form, same type and body. Medini. Medini or Medatiti? They said Medini. Medini. So who's Medatiti? It's a different one. Okay. Oh, so he must have been with, I think Medatiti is with a Manu, commentary Manu. So this is a dictionary. Okay. Yeah, interesting how it has that. Akriti, right? Conscious knower. So that means he has that, you know, he is an individual, but at the same time he's of the same type. Right? He has a form, he has a position, he has energy. So depending on which one you want to look at it, you can bring out all of these. So, yeah. In that sense, jiva is non-different from Brahman Tattva. The amsha is not separate from the amshi. That is the meaning of yasti. Brahman, or the Lord who possesses jiva as his shakti, is the samasti. Vyasti is the jiva. By defining Brahman as the samasti, possessing shakti, Brahman's real nature is truthfully indicated. Right? So just to say it's unchanging, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have energies and possessing of those energies. Right? Srila Prabhupada elaborates on these terms in the Bhagavatam purport. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the cosmic world, the Lord exists as total energy, maha samasti, and thus desiring himself to be diffused to many, he expands himself further into multi-total energy, samasti. From the multi-total energy, he further, probably creates these words, just so, because English doesn't have words, multi-total. So you have the totality, because if you just say the totality, you just think, but multi, meaning that there's so many aspects. Right? From the multi-total energy, he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibautika, as explained before, vyasti. As such, the whole creation and the creative energies are non-different and different simultaneously. Because everything is an emanation from him, the Mahavishnu, or Mahasamashti, nothing of the cosmic energies is different from him. But all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designated by the Lord. And therefore, they are simultaneously different from the Lord. The living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from Him. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.13 purport. So He is the Samashti. So He is the total energy, but being the total energy, He's still an individual. Right? Because He's an individual, the total energy, then we see is that His parts are also, as He is conscious, they are also conscious, they are also individuals. But the difference is they're Vyasti, they're part of the total. While the total is the multi-total. Yeah? The tenth topic is the Lord. The rest of the verse is clear. Riti. In the next Anucheta, Srila Jiva Goswami begins explaining each of the 10 categories by quoting their definition from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anucheta 57. Do we understand why he uses Anuchetas instead of verses?
No.
Not at all. See, you notice in here, is like here, this Anucheta 57 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 verses. So that those verses together make one point. Mm-hmm. So an Anucheta is actually a point being made. Sometimes it's one verse, and sometimes it'll be more than one verse. So that's why he uses that system. Does that make sense?
It's like a section?
It'll be like a section. But it's a section that establishes a clear point.
Yes. Okay. He adds his own points also into it. So it cannot be like a shloka itself because he's adding something as a...
He's giving an explanation. Mm-hmm. Yes, meaning that... Yeah, means he may put it together in one verse, but that's why it's not like that. Does that make sense? Because he's just grouping them according to that, you know, these verses go together. Otherwise, we may not see that. Mm-hmm. Just like in Gita... Then in the second chapter, at one point, Prabhupada says, okay, now we've discussed one aspect, and now Krishna's going to discuss another.
Yeah.
You know, one was Shankya, one was Karma, one was like this. So in this way, then you get an understanding of this. So he's already put it together like that. Mm. So you know that these all go together. Mm. Is that... Yeah.
No, it is more like a thematic study.
Yes, it is. It means that the Sandarbhas are the thematic study of Bhagavatam. Okay. Right? That's why it's in our second course. So you have, because study means you have the going through a work, and then you have the thematic study. Right? Now the Acharyas, they've given thematic studies on the main works. Therefore, then we don't have to have a separate, we don't have to create our own. So, means from the Bhagavatam, then you see they run parallel. But in the first 3 years, you're doing one, then you're doing the other.
Yes.
Right? So the first year, you're going through the four books. Then the next 2 years, you're going through the thematic studies of those books. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So. What would be the difference then between Vedanta Sutra, which we consider a commentary on the Bhagavatam, and then Sandarbhas? Which would be the thematic study of Bhagavatam. That would be the difference?
Means the no, it's Bhagavatam's a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Yeah. So Vedanta Sutra is giving the essence of the Upanishads. The Upanishads are giving the essence of the Veda. And so that means the philosophical understanding is the actual essence of the Veda. It means all the other things are how you as an individual can engage body, mind, and words connected with the Absolute. So then that's given an essence in the Upanishads to make that clear and to remove any doubts. You know, all the arguments are there against the various philosophies. Then that is the Vedanta Sutra. And so then that same philosophy and all that is in the Bhagavatam, but it's given in connection with the Lord, devotional service and all that. Well, Vedanta Sutra is bringing out that it's about devotional service, but you don't see it at every point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like we were seeing, it was until that point when we started adding in Prabhupada's purports, it was harder to relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But when we bring in the purports, then we see how it always relates back to the Vaishnava philosophy. So then, yeah. So you could say it's a thematic study of the Upanishads. So many sons. And so that's that point is given in the Bhagavatam, but it being that the standard of tattva, then it's appreciated work. So then that's also part of our thematic studies. But it's just the analyzing the philosophy, basically in the way of this is the philosophy and this is how people misunderstand it and how to deal with that. Well, the Bhagavatam, you're doing that, but it's always in the context of how it's affecting devotional service. You know, what is your position in devotional service? What's the Lord's position? Does that make sense? Yeah. So they're both then the Sandarbhas and the Vedanta Sutra. They're both thematic studies of, you know, that we're using with the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, Anucheta 57. In order to make the 10th topic clear, 7 verses are spoken to give the meaning of the 10 topics. Sarga refers to the manifestation of the gross material elements. The tanmatras, the senses, the false ego, the mahatattva, caused when the Lord transforms the gunas. Visarga is the creation of bodies for the jivas carried out by Brahma. Right, so sarga is the manifestation of all the elements that will be used in visarga to create the bodies of the living entities. Right? Sarga is the creation of gross elements like ether, like that's gross, right? Bhuta, sense objects, matra, senses, indriya, ahankar, and mahatattva, dhyam, caused by the Lord, Brahmana, through transforming the gunas, guna, vaishamyat. Visarga, the creation of moving and non-moving beings, is done by Brahma, Paurusha. Sthanam refers to the Lord's excellence in situating the living entities within the universe. Right, so there's maintenance, you know, how he takes care of it. Poshanam means the Lord's mercy. Because the universe has to be maintained. So he's maintaining everything to such a degree that we just take it for granted that that's the way it is. Something goes wrong, they do something, then with time, nature just kind of puts it all back together. Right? That's sthanam. So how he's maintaining everything, then that's sthanam. Manvantara refers to the conduct of the kings ruling the Manvantara periods. Uti refers to the impressions created by the jiva's actions, which lead them to future births. Uti would be which one? One here. Utaya Poshanam. Oh, material activities. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10-4. Sthiti, or place for the living beings, is the excellence, vijaya, of the Lord, Vaikuntasya, in maintaining the boundaries of what was created. Poshanam is mercy to devotees in those places. The Manvant, oh, I see, so he's giving, there's the Bhagavatam verse, and he's giving an explanation. Okay. Poshanam is mercy to devotees in those places. Right, so he creates the places in which all the maintenance of things go on. Then in those places, he gives mercy to the devotees. That's why you see there's a connection between poshanam, nourishment, and maintenance. Right? Yes. The manvantara means the activities involving worship, sadharma, performed by manus and the devotees who receive their mercy, living during the manvantara periods. Utaya refers to the various impressions of karma during this time. Isha Kata refers to descriptions of the Lord's avatars and their devotees, filled with various stories. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10-5. Ishanu Kata means stories about the avatars of the Lord and stories about the followers of the Lord. Footnote 25. Srila Prabhupada comments on the significance of these narrations. Quote, the merciful Lord, out of his causeless mercy, descends to various planets in the material world, acts for the salvation of the conditioned souls, and acts for the salvation of the conditioned souls. That makes the history and narrations worth reading. Srimad Bhagavatam offers such transcendental topics of the Lord in relation with great devotees. Therefore, the topics of the devotees and the Lord are to be given respectful oral reception. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.5 purport. So he's doing this, but in the context of how these great devotees and that, the interaction with the Lord, how people come to the transcendental position. Therefore, these histories are worth hearing. Other histories, not really. Because if you say, no, we can learn so much from history, but Devamrita Maharaj said, being a history major, that there's a saying in the history, how you say, department or discipline, that the only thing you learn from history is no one learns from history. it's like what was it? He had the five sons, and he took the youth from one of them.
Yayati.
So by engaging in religious material activities for 1,000 years, then he came to the conclusion that that you can be satisfied knowing that there is no satisfaction. Does that make sense? Right? Because one's dissatisfied. Why? Because you think you can be satisfied, and you're not. So you think, if I make an adjustment, I do things this way or that way, then I'll be satisfied. But Yayati, then, being intelligent, then he understood that no matter what arrangement you made, because for 1,000 years he followed all the different religious things that are there to engage the senses. Yeah. And in that, then he found there is no satisfaction. It means the Shastras say it, the Upanishads say. But, sometimes we need, that third class intelligence to go through it ourselves. Right? Yeah. So then he was able to understand this. So that's then from there. So one's trying to come to that platform. I mean, best is we just hear it and understand, but if not, at least experiencing it, then you understand. Yeah. So that makes sense. So these ones are a benefit because they take you to the transcendental platform. And the other stories, they don't really give you much of anything. There's something to talk about, keep you busy, on that cold winter day or something, sitting there in your chair in front of the fire, reading a book, something like that. Isha Kata, okay, we said. Nirodha refers to the merging of the jiva along with his material identity into the Lord at the time of final devastation of the universe. Right, so it means as an energy you go back into that position of the marginal potency. But as an individual jiva you remain, but being unconscious you can't perceive anything there, so it's as good as, merging. Mukti means the jiva's attainment of his form as pure Atma after giving up gross and subtle material bodies. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6. Then his comments. Nirodha means sleeping of the jiva. Atmana, with his upadis, shakti bihi, along with the Lord's asya, sleep, anu shayanam, at the end of the maintenance period. So the Lord sleeps, so he's just there, but in his sleep, then he's, fully conscious, but in our deep sleep, we're not. So that's the thing. He can be in deep sleep and be aware of everything. But if we're aware, we're not sleeping well, and if we're in deep sleep, we can't. So when the Lord's sleeping, we merge into that sleeping. And then with the jiva, all his upadis, everything like that, merge in there. Because you can say, then there's nothing there. No, but all his upadis from that uti, is still there. Just he's totally unconscious, and there's no consciousness of anything outside of that. And so therefore, he is just existing there. Right? So saying he merges works quite well. Right? The sleep of the Lord's means he closes his eyes to the material world. The sleeping of the jiva means merging into the Lord. Liberation, which is in the category of Nirodha, is being situated in one's sarup after giving up the covering of ignorance. Anyata rupam. So footnote 26. Absolute destruction of upadis of the jiva, liberation, is the fourth type of Nirodha. Right? Because there's four kinds of devastation. Remember we were talking before, there's the every moment it's going on. Your body at every moment there's something there, then you have
Brahma
or
Brahma.
Manvantara, then they have Brahma, and then
those
two are the same. Then you have the end of the life of Brahma, then you have the end of the existence of the living entity in the material world. When they go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Yes.
I met one person who said that he's practicing Nidra Yoga.
Nidra Yoga.
Ask what you do. He said, you learn how to sleep. How to say it. Go to the state where you're just half conscious, half sleep, and conscious at some of the time.
So yeah, but that's called dreaming anyway.
So,
I mean, it's just a yogic practice. It's a way of resting that, because if you go to, you know, you actually just go to sleep, then you need a good amount of sleep to get the full benefit. But the yoga nidra, what they're doing, it's just shavasan, where, and you're supposed to maintain consciousness. You can't go to sleep. Where you go unconscious and when you're doing shavasana. It's just they do it for longer. Normally you just do it for a very short time after the asanas or the end of session. But this is they do it as a practice. And so then it's just a matter of being aware during that time. You're not supposed to fall asleep. And then from that it's more restful for that short period. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just that's there. But it's just a practice to... It's more of a practice just for resting or, you know, kind of like why people do yoga and that anyway, just to make the mind more peaceful and all that. Mm-hmm. But the point is unless he's thinking about Krishna or something like that, then what lasting benefit will he get? Does that make sense? It's not a hard thing. They talk about it like it's difficult. You just lay down on your back and completely relax and just stay conscious. That's all it is. It's not more than that. You know, they may try to make it seem like more than that, but just mostly you lay down like that and within 30 seconds you fall asleep. They just are able to just stay awake. You know, so it's like, it's kind of in between. But it's not Krishna's yoga nidra because he closes his eyes to the material world. They're still absorbed in the material world. So their yoga nidra is just, you know, in pursuance of, but it's not the same as Krishna's. Right? So, yes.
I've noticed many devotees, they fall into that stage during Bhagavatam.
Yes, well, that's why it's so refreshing. That's why, means in the Bhagavatam, one of the natures of the shlokas, I think, in the first canto, and probably second chapter, is that all anxieties are removed. So, because there's no anxieties, then they're able to go into this state very easily. So that shows the Bhagavatam is working.
Right? Not conscious, but not fully asleep.
Yes. Yeah. But not exactly, yeah, kind of, yeah. The only one I've heard of that would be in that state, but would be still fully conscious, was Jayadvaita Maharaj.
Pankajangi Prabhu sometimes.
He's also like that.
You ask him, he's answering to the point.
Yeah.
Although it seems like he's...
Yeah, so then that's two of them that do that. They're completely like as though they're asleep, but they're completely conscious and hearing. Just the body's not. But other than those two, most everyone else is. But it's because of the Bhagavatam. Like that. It removes all... So they're in the liberated condition, but they just haven't come to the dynamic, active position yet.
I heard a few times some devotees describing newcomer comes and he says, no, oh, your Bhagavatam class is so excellent that for so many years I couldn't get peaceful sleep.
Yeah.
I sit in the class.
They sit in the class, and yeah. So everyone likes to come to Bhagavatam. Yeah. Yes.
Mahaprabhu says, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kame Sakala Ashant Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Shanti. Means all the material enjoys, bhukti, mukti, wanting to for liberation,
yes.
And siddhis, who is aspiring for siddhis, they are always not peaceful.
Yes, yes.
And only Krishna Bhakta is peaceful.
Peaceful. That's why when you come to Bhagavatam class, you see the devotees are all peaceful. Very good. So now we have the shloka. That's it. So. Okay, so liberation is the category of Nirodha, is being situated in one's sarup after giving up the covering of ignorance. Anyata rupam. Right, so that's talking about that fourth type. Means the Nirodha, the destruction of the universe, there's three aspects, that's described, but it's about the fourth, because if you're taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, then it's about that fourth type of Nirodha, of destruction. where you're giving up the material consciousness and then functioning eternally on the liberated platform, right? In relationship with Krishna. That's why it says, in your sarup. Because otherwise, one is in the sarup but not conscious, then that's our previous stage. We may have the sarup, but we're not conscious of Krishna. Right, so then we're situated with one's sarup after giving up the coverings of ignorance. So here, that is, we were in ignorance, even though one's situated in one's sarup in ignorance, the Aditya Shakti. And so therefore, then you come to the material world. But now, by practice, we're then practicing giving up this covering of ignorance. So then, being situated again back in one's sarup, then one will progress forward to prema. You understand? Because the marginal, it has to go one way or the other. It can't stay in the middle. So you either are conscious of Krishna without ignorance, right? It may not have developed the prema, but there's no covering of avidya. Then you move forward to prema. But if there's the covering of avidya, then you move backwards to the material world. So it says, yes.
This aspect is described in the 12th canto, which is after describing the whole past tense of the Lord. First I was wondering, like, why this annihilation and all this comes in the 12th canto? Because generally all creation is described,
right.
Should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I went through this, then it got to the point that, okay, you understood everything now. Remain steady in that liberated position to...
In service of the Lord.
In the service of the Lord.
Yes, yes, very good, very good. Yeah. Okay. Anucheta Prakashika. To understand the Lord, or Brahman, means to know Him along with His potencies. Just as one who knows the sun must also know about its potency, sunshine. The 10 topics of the Bhagavatam occur only by the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the purpose of their description is to know Him. In this Anucheta, Jiva Goswami defines the 9 potencies, starting with Sarga, creation. So, you're saying about Brahman, to know Him with the potencies, just like the sun, if there's no sunshine, what's the point of the sun? Right? It means they go together. You can't separate them. So Krishna and His, you know, as Brahman, is non-different from the person. But the point is the person who extends Brahman. So then then all the living entities, all the different Shaktis, so all these things, knowing the energies means you have to know Krishna, knowing Krishna means you know His energies. So either way you approach. So we saw we approach from Vyasti, from the soul's position, now we're approaching from Samasti, from Krishna's position. Srila Balade Vidyabhushana. The 10 topics starting with Sarga are defined. Brahmano guna vaishamyat means from the disturbance of the gunas caused by the Lord. This means that the Lord is the original creator of the universe from its most subtle cause, prakriti. Brahma is the creator using the effects, material elements. Right? So Krishna, that primary creation means you're starting with prakriti, the most subtle cause, and then bringing out all the gross elements there. Right? And so then the effects of that means the effects of Krishna's creation, mean taking prakriti and making it into, prakriti and making it into the Mahatattva. Then Brahma is taking that and making then the secondary creation. Giving up, hitva, the false form, anyata rupam, that of a devata or human produced by avidya, corresponding to aversion to the Lord, right? So this avidya corresponding to aversion to the Lord. So this is not the kind of seeming avidya of yogamaya, where the devotees don't really worry about His Krishna's excellence in the way of being the Supreme Lord. Okay, destroying it by bhakti, which flows from favorability to the Lord, right? So being favorable to the Lord. So that's what was the difficulty the other day. When the question comes up is about Krishna, how, you know, He is the Father of the universe, why isn't He taking care of us so nicely? You know, if I as a father, I'm doing a fabulous job. You know, like that. So the point is, it has to be favorable towards the Lord. Then only you can give up the material. Right? Otherwise, then it's aversion to the Lord. Then giving up this false form, then, you know, you can merge in Brahman or the void, then come back again. Mm. Means you'll be back. It's guaranteed. Yeah. So a person becomes situated in a special way. Vyastiti, near the Lord, with no return to birth and death. He becomes situated in the Surup of the Jiva, Surupena, endowed with the eight qualities, starting with absence of sin. Right, so coming to that position, he gets situated again in his Surup. And then from that position, he's able to then serve the Lord eternally. Right, so that's the actual point. So you're going from the creation sarga all the way up to this aspect of Nirodha, or liberation, meaning that he now situates himself again in his relationship with the Lord. Srila Prabhupada also comments on this important verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6, as follows. The material, gross, and subtle forms are simply due to the conditioned soul's ignorance, and as soon as he is fixed in the devotional service of the Lord, he becomes eligible to be freed from the conditioned state. This devotional service is transcendental attraction for the Supreme on account of his being the source of all pleasing humors. Everyone is after some pleasure of humor for enjoyment, but does not know the supreme source of all attraction, raso vai saha. The Vedic hymns inform everyone about the supreme source of all pleasure. The unlimited fountainhead of all pleasures, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one who is fortunate enough to get this information through transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam becomes permanently liberated to occupy his proper place in the kingdom of God. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6 purport. Right? So that's the importance of the first three aspects of destruction. Those are in context of the living entities and their material activities, their material karma. But so as long as that's going on, then they take part in those first three. But when they take up Krishna consciousness, then they attain the level of the fourth stage. And that then liberation then takes them back to Godhead. Riti. Having described the first nine tattvas, Srila Jiva Goswami next defines the Ashraya tattva, or the fountainhead of all existence, none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anucheda 58. The Ashraya, Bhagavan, from whom arise creation, subcreation, protection, mercy, karma, the dharma of the kings, the appearance of avatars, destruction, and liberation, is also called Paramatma and Brahman. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.7. The famous Ashraya is called Brahman and Paramatma, from whom creation, Abhasha, and destruction, Nirodha, appear. Adya Vasi Yate, in the knowledge senses of the jivas. The word iti indicates these types, and thus indicates Bhagavan as well. The Ashraya will be more explicitly explained in the next verses. Right, so it's the person, but we're also knowing because he takes care of all these things as Brahman and Paramatma. But the whole point of these ten is to bring you to the Ashraya of the person, the original person. Right, not to Brahman and Paramatma. Anucheda Prakashita. The whole of the Satsandarbhas are dedicated to explaining the Bhagavatam's tenth and principal theme, the Ashraya. Here, Sri Jiva Goswami only hints at the identity of the Ashraya. To define the supreme truth in relation to the material world as the source of its creation, maintenance, and destruction says little about the full extent of the Lord's glories, especially the opulent and attractiveness of his personality. Right? So, he's pointing out that these aspects, we'll see them in connection with Brahman and Paramatma. But it doesn't do full justice to him, especially as he is as Paramatma, and how these other aspects are connected with how Paramatma and Brahman are connected with Bhagavan. Nevertheless, our limited modes of thinking in material life dispose us to appreciate more readily the impersonal aspect of the Supreme. In fact, the Vedanta Sutras begin by describing him in this way, Janmadyasya Yataha, 1-2-2, quote, that from which came the creation and other transformations of this world, end quote. So we're inclined towards this because of our material consciousness, because right? We're not accepting him as the Supreme Person. If we were, why would we, when you have an unlimited thing and you have something else, let's say I have a Rolls Royce, right? very nice model, everything there. And you can have that, or there's also next to it, we put in a nice little thing, we made a Rolls Royce out of, styrofoam. You know, a little one there you can have. So which one do you want? Yeah, so that's the whole point. If you actually accept Krishna in his original position, why would you go for the things here? So we have to actually be inimical towards the Lord. That's why we avoid. Because logically, it makes sense. But even despite this logic, we come up with so many philosophies and positions because we don't want to accept that we're not the supreme controller and enjoyer. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan. The Ashraya Tattva, characterized by the nine, beginning with Sarga, is described. Yata means cause from which. Right? So all these nine are coming from the tenth. Viti. In the next Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami gives further reasoning for the Lord being the Ashraya of everything. Anucheda 59. Divisions of sense perception are mentioned in order to show clearly the sarup of the ashraya through direct realization by means of the individual, vyasti, footnote 27. These two verses follow the description of the 10 topics in the second canto. So, as we were discussing before, you have to start, means if we're going to understand, we have to start with something you can relate to. And generally we can relate to ourselves, because we've always been with ourselves, since time immemorial. So that's the one place we can start and we're cool. Right? So, starting from there, you want to show the form of the Lord by starting with us, how we relate, and then how He's the source of that. Right? So, having done that, appreciating the Lord, now you can take it from that position of who He is and how He does things. Right? Yo, jyat miko yam purusha so sav evadi daivika yas tatro bhaya vichedha purusho yadhi bhautika. The covering on the jiva, known as the subtle sense organ, is not distinguished from the presiding deities of the senses. The gross organ of the material body then arises, because of which the distinction between sense organ and sense deity arises. But so, in other words, the beginning, there's no difference between them. Just like, let's say, what's it? The sun and the eyes and being able to see. There's no distinction because they all go together. Right? But then when the gross body arises, then at that point, now you make the distinction. Does that make sense? So we're going to start from that place and then go backwards. Right? Yeah. The seer, the jiva, who identifies with the senses, such as the eye, adhyatmika purusha, is also the presiding deity, such as the sun for the eye. There's no distinction between the sense and the deity before the creation of the material body. Right? Because the principle of how eyes work, that there is an eye, eyes can work, the seeing process, all that, that's already there. It exists. That's in the primary creation. Then, in the secondary creation, when you have the gross body, then now you see an eye that's separate from the sun. But otherwise, they function the same, because no sun, the eye doesn't work. So, does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it's metaphysical. Then you can start to understand, so who's controlling that? I'm using the eye because I'm conscious. So who's controlling this principle that it always works? That has to be the Supreme. At that time, the senses cannot act because of a lack of support, because there's no gross body. The functions of contracting objects caused by the sense and making the sense active caused by the devata are absent. The jiva exists without differentiation between the senses and their deities. So without the gross body, the jiva is there with the subtle body and you can't apply anything because there's no distinction. Right? The subtle body means it has all those elements to it of the modes of nature and how everything functions. The tan matras and everything. That's all there. But until the gross body is there, you can't use it. You can't manifest it. Does that make sense? So in the same way, you also, that may be why we're getting to here, is that the universe that has all these things, but without the Lord, it can't be manifest. Like that. The body, Purusha, which is seen, the covering on the jiva, which is represented by the gross eye, Adi Bhautika, appears because of which, yat, the senses and the controlling deities become distinct. Sava esha purushon na rasa mayaha. That body is made of food and rasa. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1. Okay. Anucheda. Okay, so in here is you have the living entity. So in this case it would be, here is that the living entity is the Adiatmik, right? Then the eye, the gross eye, is the Adi Bhautika, because that's from which you can see. And then the Adi Daivata is the demigod in control of the sight. Right? What we're saying is, depending on how you put it, it all shifts around. Yeah. Anucheda Prakashika. In the previous Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami showed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Ashraya Tattva, or supporting element. Even from the... time's up. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.